right now, I want to let you know about an upcoming event called Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground. This is a book release celebration, as well as an interactive workshop, Future Water Solutions. Join Greywater activists and editors Laura Allen and Cleo Wolfley Erskine, as well as Julie Oscar Cole. They're the three editors of this book, Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground, that is coming out soon. Join the three of them, as well as contributing author Andrea Del Moral, on May 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. Again, this is a book release celebration and an interactive workshop, Future Water Solutions. Take a closer look at what individuals, communities, and municipalities are doing to reconnect to water cycles and join a discussion of local and global issues. This is going to take place, again, May 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. There's a $5 donation at the door, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. It's sponsored by Local Solutions to Global Problems. And their number, for more information about the event, their number is 419-6574. That's 419-6574. And joining me right now to talk about the book, the upcoming book, Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground, as well as the upcoming event, is one of the three editors who will be here in Santa Cruz on May 24th, Laura Allen. Hello, Laura.
Hello, George.
Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. Maybe we could start off, you could just give us a brief overview of the book.
Okay. So this book is an anthology, and it's both a radical history of water and the history of dams and infrastructure development in the West. And it's also a do-it-yourself guide to alternatives to sustainable technologies such as gray water systems, harvesting rainwater, and composting toilets. So we combine analyzing history of water with the active fight for its future, looking at global issues, mega dams, people fighting for control over water, people fighting for restoring their rivers, as well as people fighting to take back control of their water sources.
So it's a combination of do-it-yourself, hands-on solutions, as well as some of the environmental victories in the sustainable use movement, as well as some history?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of history does it go into?
It goes into the history of dams, the development of dams in the United States and predominantly in the West. A lot looking at California with the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project. We also look at the mega dam, like the exportation of this technology, having giant dams that completely and utterly alter rivers and destroy, people who are living with these rivers. Looking at some of these projects happening globally, such as the Three Gorges Dam Project that's happening in China. Some of the history is also water privatization and what's happening in this country as well as in other countries, like in Bolivia. There's some victories in our history as well. Mm-hmm. And also kind of coming from the history of dams to more current dams, looking at dam removals that are happening in Washington State and in California and as well as other places in the world.
So it goes into things like water privatization, some of the history and current situation with that, as well as the history of dams, you say, focusing on California?
There's a lot about California because California has one of the largest waterworks in the world with all of the rivers. Most of the rivers are in the north, and most of the use is in the south of the state. And California has giant agriculture use and has had the political means of getting these giant dams and canals and shipping the water from the north to the south. So California just has a lot of water issues happening in the state, mm-hmm. and a lot of history takes place in California.
Mm-hmm. A number of years ago, I saw a PBS series called Cadillac Desert, and was just astounded at, there's so much I didn't know about how the face of California had been completely changed, including that Los Angeles was literally created out of the desert by diverting water from the Central Valley, I believe, drying up a huge lake in the middle of California where migrating birds no longer could come to, and there was used to be huge numbers of birds there. Can you just talk about the face of California and the just the way it's been completely altered by dams and by the redirection of water. Just kind of maybe give a few examples of what you go into in the history.
One example that I didn't know about, you know, growing up is the Central Valley, which, you know, I think of as kind of like a desert, was really a huge wetland. And there was flooding that happened every year, and it was a huge migratory path for birds, like you spoke of. And because of dams and using that water for, you know, urban use and agriculture use, those are completely gone. All of the wetlands are gone, almost all of them. The California Water Works, you know, some rivers don't even reach, like the rivers are completely altered. And if you look at maps of California's water work system, you know, there's pipelines going all over coming from the Shasta Dam, taking massive amounts of water, piping it up over mountains, piping it into the Delta, then pumping it from the Delta down south so we can irrigate the entire Central Valley. And also it's, you know, development is getting a lot of that water as well to develop areas that just don't have a water source near them at all. So they're getting their water from hundreds of miles away.
So what is wrong with all that?
It's completely unsustainable. It's very expensive, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of problems with the technologies in dams, and dams destroy the salmon runs, they destroy fish, they destroy the natural ecosystem of the rivers. And if we care about rivers and all the things that live in them and depend on them, then dams just, they have to go.
Now, you say that there's been some dams actually removed. Now, I hadn't heard about that. Maybe you could let me know a little bit more about
that. In the United States and in some countries in Europe, there's a growing movement of dam removal. There's been dams removed, you know, lots and lots of dams, a lot of them very small dams that were more for irrigation, like, you know, small dams. There have been some hydroelectric dams removed as well, one in Maine. Some of the stories that we speak about in the book are these two dams on the Elwha River in the Olympic Peninsula, and they aren't removed, but they've been slated to be removed. And that deadline keeps getting pushed back because they're having to do all these, you know, all this work to get ready for the removal. But these are two pretty big functioning hydroelectric dams that are going to be removed. The date just got pushed back to 2012. And the force behind this removal has been a unification of the tribe, the Lower Elwha Klallam tribe. They've been fighting since the dams first went up and destroyed their salmon runs, them joining with environmentalists to push for this dam removal. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is that dams, when they get licensed, they just have 50-year license, and then they have to reapply. And so when the license came up, the tribe and the environmentalists and other people who cared about the river and the state park system actually as well, they really pushed to have the dams taken down because they don't have fish ladders, and the power company was either going to have to install fish ladders or take the dams down. And a lot of times they're finding out that it's cheaper to remove the dam and to get the electricity or water elsewhere than to install a fish ladder.
What about the argument that the dams provide a clean source of energy?
Small-scale hydroelectric power where you don't completely stop the river from flowing is a sustainable solution, but you can't. The scale of these giant dams is not sustainable, and it's not environmentally good because they stop all the nutrients from flowing down the river. They prevent fish from migrating upriver, and they change the whole hydrology of the river. They also have a lifetime. They start silting up, and so eventually they're not going to work anymore. And there's a lot of problems in the reservoirs, things leaching into the water, contamination of the water. Globally, there's even, you know, more problems with sewer getting into the reservoirs, and these reservoirs becoming these giant toxic lakes that cause a lot of problems.
This may not be very common or frequent, but there's also the issue of dams failing at times.
Definitely.
Too.
Yeah, and in other countries, there's been, I mean, in this country, there has been dam failures as well that have hurt people. In other countries, there have been a lot of massive dam failures that have killed, you know, thousands of people, and they are very dangerous.
Now, I don't know if you might not be able to answer this question, but I had heard that in Yosemite, where Hetch Hetchy is, the reservoir there that supplies San Francisco, much of San Francisco, with water, that there had been some discussion about possibly removing that dam there and actually rehabilitating that valley that has been absolutely flooded since the dam was put in. And a lot of people say it's like a smaller Yosemite Valley.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I have heard about that. And I want to support dam removal in general, but I also think that people should be strategic in what dams should be removed and what benefits they're going to give. And a lot of the reason for removing that dam that I've read about and heard is for restoring the natural beauty of that valley. And that's great. But then there's other dams like the Snake River and dams. If those, there's dams that if you can remove them, you can open up hundreds of miles of salmon habitat, and you can really create a lot more benefits than just natural beauty. And I think that for, having a strategy about removing dams and having a limited amount of resources, that other dams would be better to remove than the Hetch Hetchy Dam.
Better to focus on if you had to choose, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and if they remove that dam, they're going to have to get a lot of water from somewhere else. And an alternative that I've heard about is raising some dams that are closer to urban areas, which would flood even more land it would flood land in a more urban area where more people have access, not as far away from urban centers. So we would lose open space that's more accessible to more people and gain open space that's farther away and less accessible to people.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So you mentioned that in the book, and again, I want to remind listeners that I'm speaking with Laura Allen. She's one of three editors of an upcoming book called Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground. It's also edited by July Oscar Cole and Cleo Wolfley Erskine. All three of them, as well as one contributing author to the book, Andrea Del Moral, will be here in Santa Cruz on May 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudon Nelson Community Center in a book release celebration and an interactive workshop, Future Water Solutions, taking a closer look at what individuals, communities, and municipalities are doing to reconnect to water cycles and join a discussion of local and global issues. And Laura and I are talking about this upcoming book, Damnation. You mentioned that there's been this export of mega dams to other nations like India. If you could talk a little bit about why that's been happening and what the consequences of that are.
It's happening all over the world in quote-unquote developing countries, Central America, South America, all over Asia. And the consequences are really dire. Hundreds of thousands of people are being displaced from their land. People who have sustainable lifestyles and who've been living on this land for, thousands of years, I'm imagining that's the only place that the people have been. And they're being displaced from their land. Farmland is being flooded. People are being forced into urban slums and working as laborers. It's happening everywhere. It's really environmentally and socially a disaster for the world.
What is being done to confront this
spread?
There's
huge protests and a growing movement of people who are fighting against this from, globally. India has a lot of, Vandana Shiva and Arundhati Roy have, spoken a lot about water issues and dams. More Arundhati Roy, she has a book called Water Wars. In Thailand, there's been a lot of people fighting dams on the Moon River, and one dam has been permanently opened. The floodgates are permanently opened, and that's a victory because the dam's not gone, but the floodgates are open so fish can swim through it. So yeah, it's happening everywhere, and everywhere where they're trying to build a dam, there's a resistance movement.
And how many contributing authors are there to the book Damnation?
There's about 15 contributing authors, and we are part of the Water Underground. We call it the Water Underground, and we've interviewed people, all over the world who are also fighting and struggling and succeeding to create water justice for them and their communities.
And can you give us just another, if you could just repeat again what the book covers and what these 15 different contributing authors, some of the different things they're contributing to the book?
So it's kind of three major parts. The first one is the history, which we've spoken a lot about, of dams and kind of how we got to this place with our relationship to water and who has access to running water and who doesn't, and just kind of the bigger issues with water. And then the second part of the book is, it's called Storming the Sewer, How to Disengage from the Water Grid. And so it's kind of how to live in a different way, knowing this history and knowing all these problems associated with how we interact with water, what you can do about it daily in your everyday life, practical things, maybe things you can't do right now but that you can know about, like rainwater catching, using gray water, having composting toilets. We interview people around the world who are also working on these issues. In other countries, people are doing a lot more with this, with using composting toilets and using gray water and trying to restructure society so it doesn't rely on dams and having access to lots and lots of water. And then the third section of the book is looking at restoration, looking at kind of bigger picture, restoring wetlands, bigger picture problems as well, like toxins and fish, destructions of coastal wetlands. There's an article about the Mississippi Delta with the New Orleans crisis, what happened with the levees and what happens when you destroy wetlands, the consequences of that. We also look at larger scale restoration, and a lot of that in the United States is happening on native land where people have access and the desire to restore their lands. And so we have stories about people who are working to restore their watersheds.
You've already addressed some of the success stories in the book, some of the environmental victories, but maybe you could just mention at least one more.
So one more. Some people in the world are trying to actually design cities in a more ecological way without relying on dams. And in China, they're building, it's called an eco-city, and it's the first one ever to be built that is not using sewers at all. They're having, every house is having a composting toilet. They have multi-story apartments. The infrastructure is going to support people to live in a sustainable way with water. So they're kind of trying to avoid all these problems that are happening in other places. And it's going to be a city of a couple thousand people, where every house has gray water, every house has composting toilets. The city will pick up recycling, they'll pick up the feces from composting toilets, and they will have, gray water in every house.
I'm speaking with Laura Allen. She is one of three editors of an upcoming book called Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground. She and July Oscar Cole and Cleo Wolfley Erskine. And there's 15 contributing authors to this book as well. Laura, you're going to be in Santa Cruz along with the other two editors and one of the contributing authors, Andrea Del Moral, on May 24th. And I'm wondering if you can tell us what's going to take place at this event in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so we're really excited to be coming to Santa Cruz next week. And we're going to be showing a slideshow about kind of trying to give the visual impression of damnation, like what that really is. A lot of the consequences of having water and having toilets and flush toilets and sewer are really hidden. And so trying to kind of expose that, like what is behind having running water and having flush toilets. Then we're going to be doing brief readings from the book, talking about dams, talking about mining, talking about the history of sewers, talking about alternatives to sewers, and talking about people who are trying to recreate their relationship with water. We're going to talk about the future of water use. We're talking about dam removal on the global scale. We're going to talk about alternatives to sewers on the bigger picture, like how to construct cities that do not use water the way it's used right now, and also the bigger picture policy issues with water. And then we're going to have a interactive component where people can break into groups and talk about local issues that are important to them. And then we'll come back together and talk about that on the bigger picture scale. And we also have a short video called The Demise of Damnation, and it's a video about all of the cinematographic dam destruction that we could find all put together in one. So it's pretty entertaining.
Why are you so passionate about this issue? Why did you participate in creating this book, and why would you like to see people come out? Why should people come to this event?
Well, this has been a passion of mine since about 1999, when I just realized one day, there is so much water. Where does it come from? I had no idea. I didn't know where my drinking water came from. You know, we got a water bill. We were using hundreds of gallons per day of water, and it was just one day it just clicked. I was like, I did not want to live that way anymore, and I didn't know what to do about it. And so, kind of, it was a self-learning, and having these options aren't really readily available to me. And Cleo and I, on our own, started building gray water systems and doing research and learning about it. And we published a zine called The Gray Water Gorilla Girls Guide to Water. And we found that a lot of people were really interested and cared and just didn't know what to do. They didn't want to live in this way that was so destructive and disconnected from water and water cycles. But most people don't know any alternatives. And so we wanted to help give those alternatives and help people understand the history behind the water that we do have and understand the issues and who's being affected by some loss of people having running water. And I think it's important for everybody to know the history of their water and see this in a global context, and also have alternatives and things that we can do, you know, right now when you come home, that you can do, you know, you can implement this learning later, but just to know the alternatives and start living in a different way that is sustainable.
Laura, I just have a couple more questions for you if you have a few more minutes.
Yeah.
You mentioned that a lot of people, including yourself at one point, just didn't think about these issues very much or didn't know what the alternatives were, and that this has been a self-learning process for you and wanting to really step out of relying on flush toilets, etc. I think a lot of people feel like they simply don't have the time and energy or the money to go about finding alternatives. It can cost a lot of money to get a composting toilet, for example. It might require some space if you live in a small apartment to do gray water. I'm just wondering, what about people who would say, well, this would take time, it would take money, and I have very little of both? How would you respond to that?
Well, there's things that are that don't take time or money. And we actually came into this, you know, doing everything ourselves, getting everything salvaged, either for free or very cheap, and doing it all ourselves, building it, you know, learning about it. So money was an issue. Something as simple as detaching the sink in your bathroom. If you know, you can see the drain, the sink goes down, it makes a little loop. It's called the P-trap. You can unscrew that, turn it to the side, and then just have your sink drain into a bucket. And then you're getting sink water, and you can use that to flush your toilet. Or you can use that to, you know, water a plant that's outside. Something as simple as that is a way to reconnect with your water and to use your water two times. And it does, you know, it does save water, but it also mentally changes how one relates to their water and thinks about it. And you actually see how much water you're using, and then that translates to other parts of your life. That was the first step that I took, was detaching the sink drain, and it was so easy and so quick and took no money at all. And then it led us on this path of seeing what else we could change, how else we could reduce water or reuse water. And with composting toilets, you know, buying a composting toilet is very expensive. And I'm on my third composting toilet, and none of them have been bought. They've all been built. So if you learn about how these things work, you can do them yourself. You don't have to buy something that somebody else made.
And is that inside a home or outside?
It's inside.
And it doesn't smell?
It doesn't smell. It has urine diversion, mm-hmm. So the urine is separated, because the combining of feces and urine can create a lot of odor, and you can have a lot more problems. So we have it's called a urine-diverting toilet inset that is bought. That's the one piece of it that, you know, is bought. It's a little bit costly, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And then once they're separated, urine doesn't, you know, if you keep it covered, it doesn't smell, and then you have to have the toilet vented so the fumes will go outside of the house.
How did you find out how to do this?
I read a lot of books. I, you know, met people who were also interested in these things and had more experience, and I worked with them. People are really, that I've found, really open in sharing knowledge and helping people learn. And so if you have, like, basic skills, like basic construction skills or basic plumbing skills, you can do a lot of these things. And if you don't, it's not that hard to find someone that does. So I've helped a lot of friends with systems just by, you know, talking to them about the idea and the concept and looking at their house and what they need to do. And then they got someone else that had the construction type skills to build it. And it really isn't very hard at all.
Mm-hmm. What's the problem with flush toilets?
There's many, many problems. The first one is the quantity of water. Flush toilets are, on average, a third of indoor water use, so they use an enormous amount of water. That water, you know, comes from somewhere and is being taken away from some natural source. And then once you have that water, when you use it in a toilet, you've contaminated it, and it can spread, you know, diseases. It can, with the nutrients in it, it can pollute freshwater sources. You know, the water districts are allowed to have sewage overflows certain amount of times a year. So raw sewage, even in the United States, is being dumped into waterways every single year. So it can cause a lot of problems, health and ecological problems. And it's also just kind of crazy to contaminate intentionally a fresh water source when we have a limited amount of fresh water.
It's always seemed very odd to me, and I don't know the history on it, how it came to be, actually.
You know. Flush toilets are different societies. Ancient civilizations have, you know, used toilets differently. Most of the world used earth. Like, there was actually an earthen closet where earth would be added, and so it would compost. So there's been a lot of long history of composting toilets and toilets that would dehydrate feces, which would kill pathogens. In ancient times, in the Middle East, is the beginning of the flush toilet. And so thousands of years ago, there was a flush toilet system. Ancient Romans had flush toilets, and they would flush into rivers. So it did end up causing problems, but not right in their community. It was, you know, put away. And so in the fall of Rome, the flush toilet was kind of forgotten for a long time, and then it came back later.
Are you saying that composting toilets could be a reasonable solution to flush toilets?
I think they're the only solution to flush toilets.
Mm-hmm. And how would that work, say, here in the U.S.? How could you envision that actually working?
I envision it, and I spoke earlier about the eco-village that's being built in China, as the city, the infrastructure of the city supporting people, like, for example, recycling. In the United States, when recycling has started, no one told, you know, residents, okay, you're going to recycle your paper, go rip it up, put it in the blender, blend it up, and then, you know, spread it on a screen and make your own new paper and use that again. The city, you know, provided bins, and you take your paper and you put it in the bin, and the city takes it, and you really don't have to deal with actually recycling the paper. So with composting toilets, it would be the same principle. You would have a receptacle that would gather all the material, the city would come and take it and compost it off-site. So it could be composted fully. You know, they could make sure that it got hot enough, make sure that enough time had passed, and then they could use that as a fertilizer. And the people in their houses wouldn't have to actually compost it themselves.
And there's a long history of people using properly composted human waste as fertilizer.
Yeah.
It's actually quite good.
Yeah. It's excellent fertilizer.
Mm-hmm. So I just actually want to ask you just one more question, and that is, I'm wondering if the book Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground, if it addresses bottled water at all?
It addresses a little bit. There's one article about how the Nestle Corporation is taking water from a town in Michigan and selling it, and that happens. You know, the bottled water industry, they mostly take from groundwater. They take groundwater, or they take water from some community, and they usually get it for free or very cheap, and then they sell it, and then they lower the water table, and so other people can't get water. And so there is one article about that, about the Nestle Corporation and what this town is doing to try to fight back.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking with Laura Allen. She's one of the editors of an upcoming book, again called Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground. She edited it along with Cleo Wolfley Erskine and July Oscar Cole. And the three of them, as well as one of the contributing authors, Andrea Del Moral, are going to be in Santa Cruz on May 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. This is going to be a book release celebration and an interactive workshop, Future Water Solutions, taking a closer look at what individuals, communities, and municipalities are doing to reconnect to water cycles and join a discussion of local and global issues. Again, this is May 24th, Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. Well, it's a $5 donation at the door, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Again, it's sponsored by Local Solutions to Global Problems. If you want more information, you can call 419-6574. That's 419-6574 for more information about this event. And Laura, maybe you can give us a website or two of how people can read more about the book.
Yeah, we have a website. It's www.greywater, with an E, G-R-E-Y-W-A-T-E-R. gorillas.com. So it's www.greywatergorillas.com, and gray is spelled with an E.
Thanks so much for joining us today to talk about this upcoming event and the book Damnation.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll see you in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Again, that was Laura Allen, and she'll be in Santa Cruz along with the other two editors of the book, Cleo Wolfley Erskine and July Oscar Cole, and one of the contributing authors, Andrea Del Moral, on Thursday, May 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. That's on Center Street in Santa Cruz. 301 Center Street is the location of Loudoun Nelson Community Center. $5 donation at the door, but no one turned away for lack of funds. And the local number to call again for more information is 419-6574. And the website is graywatergorillas.com to find out more about the book Damnation, Dispatches from the Water Underground. That's graywatergorillas.com. Thanks so much for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, streaming online at freakradio.org.